Now it's time to broaden our regulatory horizons a touch and invite three of the country's most important cops on the beat up to the stage. I think it is a shame we don't call them the Justice League of Australia's capital markets, but they're pretty cool nonetheless. Will you please welcome Joe Longo, ASIC Chair, Gina Cascott-Lieb, the Chair of the ACCC, and John Lonsdale, the Chair of APRA. Well, thank you so much to our regulators for joining us. Joe has to be here, of course. This is his big show.
No, it's all about the team.
Oh, no, of course. But thanks to Gina and John for coming. I think one thing that really struck me as we did a preparation call for today, when you get these three in a room or on a Zoom call together, what really comes across is we do have regulators who think very deeply about how to make Australia a better place. And that sometimes involves them getting more involved in an area, sometimes involves them getting out of the way, and it might involve them working together. So I'd like to set the scene by talking about risk. It's obviously been an incredible year. Some of the most significant risks that it's been an incredible year. What are some of the significant risks that your organization's thinking about, domestic, global, geopolitical, industry specific, and how are they shaping your work, Gina? The ACCC's mandate is so wide. How are you thinking about risk at the moment, and how's that shaping your work?
We are an across the economy regulator, which is a strength and a challenge. It certainly puts a lot of pressure on prioritisation. The critical risks I want to cover are first increased concentration and increased covert anti-competitive conduct. It will surprise you, but we get continuing to get a strong flow and an increased flow of alerts and reports of cartel activity. So you would consider that is manifestly the clearest and most outright anti-competitive conduct actually going to the core of what is necessary in our economy of competitors vigorously competing with each other, but we have more covert conduct and indeed technology facilitates more covert anti-competitive conduct. So step one is just straight out concentration and anti-competitive conduct. The second is the scale and pace of technological change and its impact in terms of increasing confusion for consumers, including well-informed consumers, actually, the capacity for much more manipulative conduct and poor practices. Then the third is climate change, its impact on the economy, its impact on risk, and its impact on business and protection. Everyone in this room is well aware of the problem of accessibility and affordability of insurance across not only home, but small business strata, a whole range. And we have an important role of monitoring the effectiveness of the cyclone reinsurance pool and addressing those issues. So we have those three, each of them indeed have both domestic and global features to them. And those global features that were well addressed in the panel that we just heard, looking at the difficulty, firstly, it's extra outside our jurisdiction, so beyond at multiple outside our jurisdiction. So firstly, having the reach, having the visibility, and having the strength and scale to address highly sophisticated global crime, as scam as an example, and in some cases, international state-sponsored support to elements of those risks and crime. And that response needs a highly knit-together Australian regulatory response and also global regulatory response. The impact for us is firstly a strong focus on our new merger regime. We do need to be able to see and stop the very small number of transactions that will increase concentration and reduce competition in critical parts of the economy. So that's one of our key priorities, while of course delivering in a right-sized regulation way that the vast majority are reviewed and in fact able to be addressed and resolved within the first 20 business days, which we are committing for in relation to 80% of the notifications. So more timely, much more transparent, and therefore greater certainty for the business community. But then our the second impact on our priorities is we look at and prioritise critical sectors fundamental to the foundations of our economy: telecommunications, broadband, energy supply and services, food supply and digital platform services. And then thirdly, we are looking at areas of law reform that we consider will better protect productivity and efficiency in our economy, including we hope very soon to be delivered unfair trading practices reform, which will apply not only digitally, but to just straight out bricks and mortar, the businesses, so that we move beyond a focus solely on unfair terms to unfair processes and practices, such as subscription traps, for example. And finally, we have a lot of international collaboration, noted the Secretary General referencing the importance of bilateral and multilateral collaboration, and the ACCC is engaged both in our region. We helped establish, together with the New Zealand Commerce Commission in the last year, Pacific Island National Competition, Consumer and Economic Regulator Network, which is supporting the growth of some of the smallest but very important regulators for their countries, but also for Australia in our area and geopolitical risk. So it includes Pacific Islands, Samoa, Fiji, Vanuatu, a whole set of countries with very young regulators who are benefiting from exchange of experience. And we are fortunately being supported by our government for the ACCC to assist in that work. So it's one region, but we are working closely in the ASEAN region. We, of course, attend all the international meetings and groupings, including, of course, at the OECD for both competition and consumer. But the ACCC is doing some really key driving of really raising the understanding and the capacity of work in our regulatory areas in our closest region. And we see that as beneficial for Australian business, for the Australian community, and for Australian interests in this region.
It's an amazing area to cover, Gina, everything from sort of digital platforms that we use every day to flammable baby clothes to the biggest corporate deals. Speaking of young regulators, though, John Lonsdale, you've got a similarly wide mandate. Are there any new risks this year has thrown up? One thing that's come through to me in this panel is we've all known that super is a big sector for a long time, but I think I feel in the last 12 months or so, there's a realization of just how big it is. Is that something that speaks to you?
Absolutely. So let's talk about risk first, because that's our core business, risk for the prudential regulator. And the challenge that we've got is there are a lot of them, but if you're going to pick one that's really turned the dial for APRA in the last 2 years, it's geopolitical risk. And there's a spectrum of it. So at one level, there's the very transparent ones like trade conflict, supply chain issues. We've got open conflict in some parts of the world. But then there's the more disguised variety, which are very concerning. So cyber, operational risk, and the sorts of things that I've heard talked about at this conference today. So none of those issues are for APRA alone to solve. They are collaborative. They are global, many of the issues. But we're working very hard as part of the CFR and the CFR Plus on geopolitical risks. We've got a big work stream program. We're looking at scenarios, for example, plausible but severe scenarios. So how would we respond as a financial system? Because any of those things has real world impacts on the entities that we regulate, and more importantly, for the community that is set up to serve. So they're real issues.
Could you give us an example of like one of the scenarios that you're thinking about, John? Like how serious are we talking?
Sure. So what would happen in Australia, for example, if a major bank could not make payments, or you could not make withdrawals, not for an hour or not for 2 hours, but actually for days or for weeks? How would that play out? And that would not produce good outcomes for the Australian community. And the answer to that conundrum is not an answer that any one entity can actually answer. It's got to be a collaborative effort. And so that's just one of the things that we're looking at. So there's a whole range. Cyber's really big. We need to do more work on cyber. We've got a new standard on operational resilience that came into play on 1 July. And one of the big things we're looking at there are third-party providers. And we've got a list of material third-party providers. We're going through that very, very closely. You mentioned super. Super will soon be the largest part of the Australian financial system. And it's worth pausing on that for a minute. That is quite a unique feature about Australia. And, you know, we've done a lot of work on thinking about what it means, just not for members, but for the system. And what would that tell us about the system? We've had a lot of focus on investment governance, big focus over recent years, making sure that that's right, our platform work on liquidity. So super's been a big issue for us. Insurance affordability is a really big issue and a big risk in this country, and it's a risk that's getting worse. Again, not one for APRA alone to solve for, but one that we need to solve collaboratively and with industry to see if we can make that better. And what else? Probably two more. Globally, global fragmentation. So we have benefited for many years as a mid-sized economy with sound global regulations. There's movement on that, and we're at the table. We need to be very alert to that. So that is something that we are watching very closely. And the final one I mentioned domestically, which is always a big focus for us, is housing. So we've seen some reductions in interest rates. What you would normally see, if you look back at previous cycles, is you'd see credit growth pick up, and that is happening. Housing prices also pick up, as well as more riskier forms of lending. And to be clear, you know, there's a lot of competition in the sector. We want competition, but we want competition on price. We want it on the type of products, but we don't want it on the quality of lending. So
any signs that that might be starting to happen?
Well, you're seeing the start of it on what we call high DTI lending. So high debt to income lending, particularly on the investor front. Now, it's something that we watch very closely. Twice a year, we publish formally our view on macroprudential tools. We will be doing that again before the end of the year, so we'll have more to say on that.
Fair enough. Thanks, John. Joe, the bulls are running in markets. Volatility remains pretty high, but you've also been leaning into some really big philosophical questions about how markets work in Australia. How are you processing that amongst all these other risks that John and Gina have spoken to?
I think the key is to be open. The risks are, we all sort of know what the risks are. But in the last 24 hours and certainly the last 15 minutes, we've rehearsed them, the geopolitical risks, the cyber security. We live in a world of increasing uncertainty, rapid technological change. So we sort of, as Mike Burgess sort of really appropriately called out, we sort of know that these problems and risks exist. It's what we do with them. And I think the capital markets work we're doing, part of the reason for doing it is to really generate and encourage a very open dialogue and discussion with the market and the general community about, well, what is going on here? And John makes a point that I also fully endorse, that the superannuation part of the story is just going to get more and more significant. The significance lies in the fact that the superannuation is driving the capital flows. Secondly, it's a critical feature of all Australians' financial well-being, and it's become a critical feature of just our system. You know, the connection of the banks and the ASX, for example. You know, superannuation is between a third and a quarter of the ASX alone, and so consequently, from my perspective, if I have to. There's any number of risks to look at, but while we're focusing on capital markets, that really is the lifeblood of the economy. So if capital stops flowing, if one of the banks stop doing what they're supposed to be doing, if there are failures in the private credit sector, then a lot of people are going to feel that very quickly. And as I pointed out recently, the liquidity is so important. It's another point John mentioned. And it's sort of something, when you've got it, it just feels it's not a problem. when it's not there, it's catastrophic. And I think that's something that I know APRA looks at from its perspective, and we look at from ours.
Can I just, we've all mentioned super. Obviously, Sarah spoke a lot about ASIC's work around Shield and First Guardian. This is something that all of your agencies are looking at. This is a question for all of you. How is this sort of moment, are you reflecting on this moment in terms of how it might change the work you do or the risks in that sector? I don't know if you want to go first, John.
So it's it's a terrible set of events, really, I think, and it's quite sobering to see what's happened. We've been talking a lot with ASIC on how to handle this. ASIC are the lead regulators here, and why is that? Because we've got MISs involved and we've got serious consumer harm, and that's what ASIC do. But APRA plays a role too, because some of these products actually found their way onto superannuation fund trustee platforms. And as I said earlier, we've had a big focus on investment governance. We've actually written recently to the fund saying we've got to do more on that. So in many ways, it has intensified work that we've had underway for some time. But it's a really serious set of issues. But Joe is the lead regulator on it.
Yeah. Gina, does the ACCC have a role in super as well?
In terms of the ASIC is manifestly the regulator of the consumer protections, consumer law in relation to financial services and products. However, if you do look taking the Shield and First Guardian misconduct as an example, there is a flow of the way in which the risks, poor selling practices land. And that starts in many cases with social media advertising. It then goes to lead generators and then comes to financial advisors, managed investment schemes, regulated superannuation funds. The last couple are sitting on my left and right. But the first two, which are a very important way in which consumers who become investors become exposed to these risks, sit with the ACCC. So social media regulation and also lead generators. So just quickly on those two, in terms of social media, we do, in addition to, because I do see this conduct as scam adjacent, in addition to the very important work relating to scam prevention and disruption, which Sarah addressed and the National Anti-Scam Centre coordinated by the ACCC together with the regulators and also with industry, are making very important strides. But if we were to look here, so we currently have litigation against Meta relating to alleged misleading conduct pertaining to celebrity cryptocurrency ads. And so we are recognising, and we are both through enforcement action and also through reform in terms of unfair trading practices reform, going to be much better capable of addressing the way in which these risks actually get disseminated and publicised to consumers who become investors. But secondly, in terms of lead generation, we currently have a review that was prompted by a designated complaint given to us by the Consumer Action Law Centre reviewing unsolicited selling and lead generation. Lead generation is applying to superannuation. It's applying to services across the economy, education services, sale of energy plans. And we are looking at actually does our law currently sufficiently, are there gaps? Are we not actually able across each of our relevant jurisdictions to capture it sufficiently? We've got a range of submissions and we will do a report, a public report early in the new year. So we do work together. We're closely working with ASIC on this, but you cannot now, because of the very high proportion, as referenced earlier in relation from one of the insurers, such a high proportion of this selling is occurring in the digital economy.
Yeah.
The question of regulation of digital services and the digital economy is really significant.
So Joe, you're the lead regulator here, but clearly you're getting lots of backup from your fellow regulators, which is clearly important.
Yeah, I think the word modesty comes to mind. I think John's being very modest. APRA also plays a critical role in this area. We jointly regulate super, and indeed the litigation will be a test of APRA's standards as well as the CIS legislation itself. So the, to my mind, if you really step back, this catastrophe will be a real test of the system because these provisions, these obligations that ASIC and APRA together administer and enforce have not been tested before. And a lot of Australians have been drawn into moving their savings, this is the phrase I've been using, from a relatively safe and conventional environment to a high-risk environment. And the high-risk environment, curiously and ironically, is regulated. And so I think this is a real opportunity for all of us to sort of step back and say, we have a wonderful system. It's in so many ways, I won't rehearse the reasons for that, but we can't be complacent about the fact that this will draw bad actors because of the amount of money we're talking about. I really like Gina's phrase about being scam adjacent. The sort of bad acting we're seeing using digital media sort of turbocharged this. So I think the key message from my perspective at the moment is we're right in the middle of holding a lot of people accountable. Sarah did a terrific job, if I may say so, of describing ASIC's work. But even so, it's almost an understatement. It's an extraordinary effort by ASIC's enforcement teams. So proud of them. Been working around the clock. This is almost unprecedented that a single sort of catastrophe will generate 10 or 15 court cases, innumerable search warrants, bannings. Like, this is a real problem. And so I think the test for us is to learn from it. It's to say, well, is the system fit for purpose? Because if we don't get a grip on this, the last thing we want is for confidence in our superannuation system to be undermined.
Yeah, great point, Joe. Gina, John mentioned the importance of or the risk from fragmentation of international regulation. The ACCC has worked really closely, necessarily, with international regulators because the tech platforms are global. What's happening in the US and Europe is often what's happening here, and these companies are sort of sometimes headquartered in the US. But headquartered somewhere else technically, so it requires a global effort. How is that international cooperation? Is it holding up? There's obviously been some changes under the Trump administration to the head of the FTC, for example. Is that international cooperation holding firm or holding firm in a relatively resilient way?
International collaboration is critical. Scam, working together in relation to scams that was addressed in the last panel is a great example of the way in which we learn from each other, we share information and alerts as to concerns domestically and globally. In terms of digital platforms, there is a consistent recognition of the challenges here and of how critical they are to the global economy and all domestic economies. There is some difference in approach of what are the right tools that are being prioritised. So there continues to be in the US, with the new leadership of the enforcement agencies, very strong antitrust enforcement action, less support from the administration of legislative intervention. However, the same issue is being pursued vigorously through enforcement. The other aspect to note is that there are, however, a range of jurisdictions globally, starting with Europe, now with the UK, with the Digital Markets Competition and Consumer Act, favouring that in relation to targeted, focused, and service-specific areas where in Europe it's called gatekeeper platforms. In the UK it's looking at the sort of significant market standing question, the critical point is where there are critical intermediary services that we are dependent upon, and the ACCC continues to strongly support, which the government has in principle, that there becomes a framework, digital platform competition measures, where the government can designate, it's expected to be a very small number, the government can designate platforms and services. Now, that is an important global initiative. We are seeing benefits. So the UK is progressing through it. Japan has introduced legislation relating to mobile operating systems, financial payment systems in mobile operating systems, and opening up competition there. So we have multiple different targeted law reform, and that is also a global response. There, it is a capacity to engage with critical global services that currently in Australia, everybody here will know, for example, if you make an in-app payment, you can only use the payment system of the relevant, so Apple or Google. You cannot in an in-app payment use a bank system, an FBOS payment service, for example. So there is restriction both in functionality and restriction in competition, and therefore higher prices that app developers and consumers are paying. So there is global change in this. In some cases, it is happening through an enforcement approach. In others, through a legislative intervention approach. We do consider that it is very important that there is global coherence and benefit to businesses, tech challenges, small businesses and consumers globally.
Yeah. Jo, I think you were recently meeting some international counterparts in Brussels. Is the global environment changing as the sort of ripple effects from the Trump administration come through? Could you sense a mood of change?
I think it's a terrific question. I don't think I'm talking out of school to say that the current administration's approach to multilateralism is a break from the more recent approach. And so I think we're feeling in all international organizations, including IOSCO, some adjustment of priorities. I think I'm trying to find the right phrase. But some of that adjustment is pretty obvious. So I'll give you the most obvious example. And that's Gina mentioned earlier the really important subject of climate risk. And so in Australia, we were one of the first adopters to make into domestic law IISSB's standards in this area. And that law took effect from the 1st of January this year, and it's a major, major piece of legislation, and a lot of ASIC's resources are going into administering those rules. Now, from the moment Gary Gensler left the SEC and an acting chair was put in, all of their rules and approaches on that topic were simply terminated, including some court cases. So that's a really powerful example of a very different approach to something that we've taken a certain view about, and IOSCO has taken a certain view about. So that'll work itself through. I think it won't be the first time that the major nation states have a difference of view about something, but I think it's important we mention that. And another area where I think we're going to see some interesting dialogue and divergence is around digital assets and crypto regulation. Again, the SEC has taken a very different approach to the previous administration. I mean, in fairness, the US approach in this area is different to Australia's, but again, it's different to the UK, it's different to Hong Kong. So I think this is an area where we're seeing a diversity of approach. Having said all that, I think the what's really at I think we should really be caring about is multilateral cooperation around information sharing. I think the US commitment to multilateral information sharing will continue. And that basically means we help each other out with investigations. The only other point I'd make, even in that area, the enforcement approach with the SEC has changed quite significantly. Probably the one that's most notable is around the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, FCPA. Again, that's something that we care about in Australia, but there's a sort of a slight change of policy going on in the US. But overall, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, absolutely. John, APRA's recently written to the Treasurer and the Finance Minister in the wake of the Economic Reform Roundtable, outlining how you try to balance stability and safety, which is obviously the most important part of APRA's work, and dynamism in the economy. It strikes me as a really hard balance to find sometimes, a sort of inherent and maybe even a healthy tension. But how are you seeing this balance shift, or how are you seeing the calls for the balance to shift?
Well, it is a hard balance, but the good news, James, is this is core business for us. So we are a safety regulator, but it's not safety at all costs. It's let's have a safe set of regulations that can keep the financial system safe, but let's do it in an efficient way, one that takes account of contestability and one that also takes account of competition. We've even given it a name in the corporate plan. It's called Getting the Balance Right. So we're on it. We've been on it for a long time. One thing we don't talk about that I think on the dynamism front is really important to note first up is that the most important thing APRA can do for productivity and dynamism is actually keep the financial system safe. Because if you don't have that, you don't have productivity and you don't have growth. And there's plenty of other countries in the world that have not got that balance right. And you can see it live as to what can happen. And so that's really important point number one. Two, we have written to the Treasurer. I've written to the Treasurer. We've said we're going to pursue 9 things in particular. And all of it is about just tweaking that balance really and trying to push into efficiency. So it's things like, can we license banks quicker? Can we be clearer about what it means to get IRB accreditation? Can we introduce more proportionality in the way that we regulate having a 3-tier system? So all of those are like great things to do. Of the 9, we will have 5 out there by Christmas, so we're serious about it. The big thing that we want to push into next, and it's come up already, is this issue about data and duplication. So whenever I talk to regulated entities, it's like, well, why are you asking us that stuff? And isn't it really similar to what another regulator has asked us? And there's slight differences in definition. So all of that is in scope, right? So if we can cut down on duplication, if we can have entities deal with one regulator as a lead instead of 2 or worse, even 3, I think all of that is good. Often when we go to entities and we say, tell us your pain points, and I think Sarah might have made this sure. point, actually, we don't get many pain points back. We just get angst back.
Sounds like my kids.
So one really interesting thing we've done, and we'll be doing more of it, we did it on the insurance side, was just forget that question and ask the question, what does it feel like to be you? And when you ask that question, actually, you get a very illuminating answer. You get, I'm dealing with a lot of regulators. They've asked me all of this by tomorrow. So that's been a really illuminating sort of piece of work that we're pushing into. So we're serious about it. We will make a lot of headway. And there's a lot of collaborative discussion, I would say, among the CFR and CFR Plus agencies to do that.
Yeah, it's a great question to ask. Gina, I think Therese spoke really well about the balance of that needs to be struck sort of with the community, that you can swing the pendulum one way, but that might create risks at the other side that we all need to sort of accept. You said something in your sort of opening remarks too, that regulation can improve productivity in certain ways. In fact, that's what you're hoping for from the merger regime and your work around competitions. Again, how do you thread this needle?
It's a question that the community, the business community, and consumer community are asking. And starting with that point, the right regulation and the right size regulation is a critical support to our economy, to the confidence of consumers engaging in the economy. So I'm sure every business in this room looks at consumer confidence, engages in customer surveys ACCC is also looking at what is consumer confidence, and we can see a serious decline in consumer confidence. We can see a high degree of dissatisfaction, particularly in younger people, in part, I'm sure, related also to intergenerational equity concerns. We can see also not only that lack of confidence and dissatisfaction addressed to a view about business behaviour, it's also addressed to government and addressed to regulators as well. The impact of that, if consumers do not have the confidence to spend, and of course many of the people in this room will be watching that, if consumers do not have the confidence to experiment with new services and new products, much of the area of innovation, productivity and change that we are looking to happen in our economy will not be supported from the demand side of our economy. And in that sense, there are critical elements where the right size regulation, and as Sarah said, a strong enforcement stance in relation to that regulation is a critical support. In addition to mergers, I'll give the example, and I see there's a question here relating to unfair trading practices reform, where people, and we saw a huge response when we commenced the proceedings against Microsoft in relation to the failure to, as we allege, the failure to make clear that consumers in their home and family Microsoft 365 plans had actually a choice, which was hidden unless you started the cancellation flow. You did not know that you had a choice, that you did not have to take Copilot bundled in together with a higher price. Now, 2.7 million Australian consumers were affected by that. Microsoft has moved, this is not at this time in settlement with the ACCC, in order to reassure the trust of its customers, and has offered a choice and now to all customers, personal customers. And as we understand, many have taken up that choice, which they were not formally aware of or offered. Now, those aspects, it's a great example of the way in which an unfair practice can result in poor lack of information, poor purchase decisions, and loss of confidence from consumers. And we strongly support that that should apply, should the reform should be made in the ASIC Act as well. We think it is very important that it applies to financial services, and we hope that that will happen as soon as possible after what we expect to be a fairly soon introduction of it in the ACCC Act. But it does mean it's vitally important, the right regulation enforced. And I would note we are engaging in and have put forward a range of reform initiatives, including removing regulation in areas where we consider it is no longer fostering competition and necessary, and we have done a number of those in relation to telecommunications sector, looking to reduce duplication through harmonisation. We are doing that in product safety, so that if an international standard provides the same safety to Australians or higher, that complying with an international standard is sufficient. You do not have to comply with a national standard, which will enable Australian businesses to build to international standards, assisting in international growth plans, and also much more competition in Australia for internationally produced. So we are aware there are key steps we can take to harmonise and reduce regulatory burden. And we're doing that combination, the right regulation strongly enforced together with proportionate regulation where those changes can be a real contributor to productivity and efficiency.
Joe, you're approaching the end of your term. You're 6 months out or so, so you can speak your mind, particularly amongst friends like you are today.
You're in this private and
privileged. Private and privileged environment. I often see you and your fellow regulators at Senate estimates through the little computer screen there, and I think, wow, what a the preparation that must go into it, the questions that you get from our wonderful elected officials. Now, there's a degree of political point scoring there. There's a degree of theatre. I get that.
You might think that,
but I one CEO said to me, you sort of watch that and you think, Where's the incentive for reform? Where are regulators being shown that the politicians want reform and want things to be improved? Is that a fair statement, or is that just part of the game?
That's a really interesting question, James. But without commenting on any particular parliamentary committee or any particular parliamentary hearing or encounter, I'd make the broader proposition that the I think we do struggle in Australia with law reform in general. I mean, I think we're pretty good at creating legislation and creating complexity. And as a country, and I include Parliament in that, I think we do need to get better and more efficient at law reform that addresses all the issues we've been talking about the last 24 hours. But putting that to one side for a nanosecond, there's a real connection with enforcement here. But the more complex the legislation, the harder it is to enforce. And and that's not in anybody's interest. So we're talking about productivity and efficiency. I don't think people are against regulation. What they're against is regulation that's so complex, it's very costly to comply with. And from the regulator's point of view, and you know, Sarah and I and the other commission have had this discussion many times, trying to unravel, you know, what the very complex provisions of the Corporations Act, and we're not orphans in this issue. A number of federal court judges have made the same point. Australian Law Reform Commission called it out as well. So I think this complexity is not good for anybody. It's not good for us, not good for the general economy. The other thing, I really want to highlight a couple of points John made. He missed out one or two. We, APRA and ourselves, we jointly administer the financial accountability regime. And one of the things we've talked about is simplifying some of the administration of that regime. And that matters too. So, and the underlying point there is that if it's something in our gift that doesn't require law reform, then one of my fundamental propositions, and we should change it. And I think all of us have got various initiatives underway that if it's in our gift, we'll try to simplify, try to reduce the number of forms, try to make it easier. One of my favourite examples, to actually find statutory instruments on ASIC's website. And when you do find them, that they're digestible and they make sense and they don't contradict other statutory instruments. So I think there's a lot we can do within our gift. But my sort of big message as I finish up is that we have to get better at law reform because there are just some things the regulators can't fix and things are becoming urgent. If we want innovation, if we want people to confidently invest in Australia, you know, there's some reforms we can introduce that will make that easier. And going back to the super switching, I think that should also lead to some law reform around managed investments, which we've been, you know, quite consistent and public about encouraging the government to prioritise.
Joe, we've heard a lot about ASIC's priorities. I'm going to ask John and Gina about some of their big bits of work coming up in the next little while. John, we're about to embark, or we've been embarking. You have been working. We'll see some results of your big stress test of the system, the system-wide stress test. This is going to be fascinating to see sort of what APRA's looked at and what's going to come out of it. Can you give us any hints?
So I'll give you a trailer. Yeah,
trailer. Perfect.
As I mentioned right at the beginning, I mean, super will soon be the biggest part of the Australian financial system. It is very unusual. A lot of our work, and a lot of government law, in fact, has been really focused on the member interest. And there's been, relatively little focus on, well, what does it mean to have actually such a large part of the system dominated by super. And so that's really the genesis of why we've really tried to push into it. So we've taken an idea from the Bank of England, which is this cross-industry stress idea. So, and to be clear, it's not to look for weakness as we would usually look when we're stressing an entity, it's actually to look for linkages. So we took the top four major banks and the top six super funds, and we imposed a stress, very severe but plausible financial stress, big currency movements, and just the icing on the cake, a bit of operational problem at the same time. We did that to the super funds. We watched the behavior. We asked them, how would you behave? Then we took that and we went to the banks and we said, well, if super funds do this, what would you do? And then we went back. So it sounds really easy, but it was actually really hard. And we spent a year doing it. We focused particularly on the liquidity flows that would happen on super, the liquidity flows on banking, particularly large institutional withdrawals, the effect on asset prices, and obviously the strength of the system, the overall strength of the system. And we've got the first round, first phase of results. More good news, James. We're going to be putting out a new publication called the System Risk Outlook. I think it's coming out next week. It's certainly coming out at the end, before the end of this month, and we will have the top shelf results. But here's the teaser. Here's the little bit. Okay. So two things stuck out at me. So one is what we saw was just the importance of super as a ballast in the financial system. So you've got banking, highly leveraged part of the financial system, and you've got super, much less so. And actually having that balance at times of stress is really, really an asset for Australia. So that's like point number one. Then interesting point number two, and then I'll stop because I don't want to spoil it, James. Interesting point number two, when we asked the funds, like, what would you do when this stress happened? And then we asked the banks, what would you do? And then we compared what they thought each other was going to do. It was actually different.
Right.
And that is very insightful, particularly on liquidity flows and the speed of liquidity. And that's something that we'll be pushing into as well.
Okay. Well, we've had the preview. We'll get the full movie next week by the sounds of it, which is great. Gina, speaking of previews, you're in the off-Broadway launch of your new merger laws at the moment. they officially come into place on January 1, but the reviews are starting to come in. This week we had a review from the venture capital sector, and they're not so happy about the time it's going to take. They're worried about, can the ACCC cope with all this work? I mean, there's always going to be a few teething problems, a bit of whinging, I guess you might call it, and probably some legitimate issues raised too. How are you seeing the preparation for this sort of big moment?
It's great to have the opportunity actually to talk together about this and to dispel some fears on one level and also some inaccuracies, actually. So 1 January, we do have the most significant change in terms of merger control in Australia and probably in our Act in the 50 years, which is that we shift from an informal merger control notification regime to a mandatory notification regime. That will only apply to businesses above certain objective financial thresholds. The ACCC has been working very hard to be prepared for this change. We do understand that change always is unsettling. And so we have been seeking to try to allay that fear. We issued our guidance in a draft form, in Sarah's manner of how such guidance is issued, before 30 June this year. We consulted widely. We listened very closely to the business community. We had very close engagement with the BCA, very close engagement with legal advisors and financial advisors. And we have taken account of what we heard in consultation, and that was guidance both on what the assessment methodology would be and what the process would be. We have also set up a very large set of subscribers who ask us questions. We publish the answers to all, and we've been conducting webinars. We have established a portal, which is now available for applicants to engage with us. What was misleading or perhaps inaccurate of what was reported this week, we have received a large number of applications. They are not the new mandatory, because the new mandatory process was able to be undertaken voluntarily since 30 June. There have only been six of those. The first two were done in the minimum possible time, 15 business days. The others are moving rapidly through a process where there is each those processes, the timeliness of those processes, they are at the world's best practice in our legislation as to the time that can be taken. They will produce much more timely decision-making and transparent decision-making than has been the case in the informal regime. What has happened in large numbers are applications in the last months of the informal regime. And people are doing that because they want to conclude transactions before the commencement of the formal regime. So it's a transition point. We had expected this. We had said to people, come in early. But we have also reduced the amount of time that we are making the decision. So in the past, our average was 17 to 25 business days. We are now at 10 business days on average. So we are very focused. We must deliver on timeliness and predictability, and we are doing so. From the venture capital sector point of view, there will be a requirement, and it's interesting because Joe also has spoken a lot about public and private. In an informal regime, listed companies, because they have the regulatory requirements to be very public, are much more observable than private equity. One of the aspects that the new regime will do, one of the examples of a transaction that had occurred in a serial manner, the pet stock growth of a pet retailing chain, the second largest in Australia, with not a single notification to the ACCC, was private equity. Now, this change will make private equity subject to mandatory notification. It is a change, but only private equity above the threshold. And it's a change that is a deliberate policy objective. It's a lot of transactions and business is occurring through private equity. And it was a disparity between public and private equity in Australia that there was not that visibility and that requirement. So there is a deliberate policy change there. But we will be timely, we will be certain, we will be predictable. And small startups that merge with other small startups will be below the threshold. Small startups that merge with medium thresholds startups will be below the threshold. Small startup that thinks its only exit is to sell to the largest global platform in the world, for example, digital platform in the world, is likely to need to be assessed. But it will be assessed in accordance with appropriate, the current test that everybody understands, substantial lessening of competition. It's change. We're well prepared. We're engaging. We want to keep hearing from you. We are going to continue our collaboration and engagement. So you can tell us, is it working? Is it certain? Is it predictable? We advocated for this change. We think it's critical for the Australian economy, and we're going to deliver it successfully.
Thank you, Gina.
Well done, Drew.
Chill out, everybody. It's going to be okay. That's the message.
That's the message I got.
Yeah. All right, we've got 3 minutes left. I'm going to give each of you 1 minute. If you could change one thing about Australia's regulatory landscape to help ensure our financial system is fit for the future, what would it be and why? John, you're going first.
One thing. Well, it's changing all the time. It has to change. So my one thing would be how we talk about it. That'd be my one thing. So community expectations of governments, of entities, and particularly regulators, very high, justifiably high. We like safety in Australia, whether you look at pharmaceuticals, air travel, financial services, they could all carry a lot of damage to the community if they're not regulated well. But whenever the issue comes up of regulation, we tend to talk about the costs of it. And I think there's a role, this is a contestable policy issue, this trade-off, and we need to also talk about the benefits of it. And as I mentioned, there are big benefits on productivity of well-regulated markets. And so having a proper conversation about costs and benefits, I think is really, really important. And that's also a role for you, James.
Yes, indeed. Yes, very good point. Very good point. Gina?
It's about balanced reporting. Interesting comment.
I'm feeling seen all of a sudden.
I really pause at this because there is so much that we want to see. But from a financial sector perspective, where the ACCC has a close involvement, my answer is digital platform competition framework to enable there to be, because one of the, in the Treasury consultation, one of the first was to relate to mobile operating systems, which would enable Australian banks, Australian financial institutions, global tech competitors to be able to offer payment systems and payment services without self-preferencing by the platform providers. And I think in the jurisdictions where this change is occurring, there are now competing app stores, competing payment systems offered by European banks and joint ventures of European banks that are competing. That competition is very beneficial. So that's my choice.
Bring us home, Joe.
I have a dream. My dream is that we create a better institutional self-correction mechanism. So it goes back to law reform. We have all these amazing ideas. I mean, John and Gina and others for improving the system, but a lot of it requires legislation. And in my humble world, I've come out publicly and said that the some variation of the old CAMAC would be a good start. But this is a real issue for us. We're a relatively small economy. We're very clever. We've a lot of good things happening in Australia, but we're not good at reducing the complexity. And secondly, there's a lot of good ideas for new regulation, and there are a lot of good ideas for getting rid of some other regulation, but we're not very good at making it happen. So my wish is that we create something that doesn't exist yet, which is some mechanism that enables and informs Parliament and policymakers to help us be more efficient in that respect.
We can unpack that idea a bit later in the day, Joe, with our final session too. Ladies and gentlemen, it is morning tea time. Don't forget to get on the app and rate this session. I couldn't imagine anything other than the highest grade, Joe.
HD, but.
I just want to say that this has been a great morning. It is fantastic in Australia that we have such strong regulatory institutions. It's even better that we have regulators like Joe and Gina and John and Therese and Sarah who will turn up to an event like this and talk thoughtfully with great consideration about what they do well, what they need to change, how they can be better. I think it's a great testament to the openness and transparency of our economy that Joe's been talking about. So, ladies and gentlemen, would you please thank Joe, Gina, and John?
Thanks, Dan.
Well done. Gina.